You're with us for Skijoring on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Skijoring comes from the Norwegian word for ski driving. 1 to 3 dogs are usually used. Horses work too. So picture a cross-country skier with her dog on a harness, and away we go. So do you skijore? How did you get involved in the sport? Do you skijore with dogs or horses? What is it like training them? Are there places people should go to watch skijoring in action? Join in, 800-642-1234. Melissa Amernick is vice president of the Wisconsin Trailblazers Sled Dog Club. She's been working with sled dogs for 25 years, and we're reaching her in Gleason this morning. Mel, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning.
Well, paint us a picture here, because some people may not be familiar with skijoring. What does it look like? How does it work?
Well, you have a pair of skis. What I use is skate skis. You can use the classic where you do the stride in the track. But the skate skis, you can go much faster. The person wears a belt. It's usually padded, and it goes around your waist. And then there's a quick release that attaches you to a bungee line. That bungee line is then attached to the harness that's on your dog. And preferably, I use a dog, not a horse. So one of my dog's name is Pony.
Oh, nice. So does Pony pull you a little bit? Do you get some extra speed?
Yes. There are some amazing skiers out there that can ski as fast or faster than my sled dogs. I'm not one of them. So I do much better having a dog pull me. I get a lot more speed. In fact, I'm in the sprint part of the aspect of sled dog racing. So my dogs can, at the fastest, going downhill up to 30 miles an hour for a short bit. We average about 16 to 20 otherwise.
Wow, Pony is a pony, I think. What do the dogs think of this? Do they like it?
They love it. Mostly what I'm doing is because of their love for running. There's days like today where I have a little bit of a cold. I'd like to just sleep in, but as soon as I'm talking with you, I'm going to go out and hook up my teams. Because they want to. That's what they live for. I do have many of them in the house with me too that run. So it's not so much that they have to run. This is something they're born to do. It's in their bloodlines.
Mel, what kind of dogs do you have?
Mine are a mix. I have Alaskan Huskies mixed with hounds. And this is to get more speed. So I have some Greyhound in some of them, some Pointer Cross mixes, so some bird dogs. And there's a few, I think, that might have some other bird dogs mixed in there, too. They're mutts, but they're bred specifically for the circuit that we're racing in. So they're very valuable in our race circuit.
What is a circuit like? How long are the races, and where do they go?
Well, I'm involved with the Wisconsin Trailblazer Sled Dog Club, which has their own group of races. Next weekend, Merrill, Wisconsin is having our first race of the season. It'll be our 21st race at Merrill. And we start out with skijoring. That's the first class of the day. And we go 4 miles. And it works out perfect because we're grooming these trails for the sled dog races. And skijoring kind of got started because of that. We're like, where can we go where we can run dogs with our skis? And the sled dog club was the perfect venue. So next weekend at Merrill would be a great time to go out and see ski jarring and sled dog racing.
So there are more than just you out there on the track, on the trail. How does it work when a skier is trying to pass another one and you've got the dogs and the dogs may want to interact with each other? That's what dogs do. Are they trained not to?
There's a whole lot of work that goes into training yourself and your dog before you ever get to a race. At least that's the optimistic. So you start with a puppy or an adult, and if they have no training, your best bet is to find someone that has a trained dog that knows what they're doing. When you think about little kids learning something new, they learn it from someone that knows how to do it. Mainly it's their parents. Well, it's the same thing with dogs. I train my young dogs or inexperienced older dogs with other dogs that know exactly what they're doing. And to learn to pass is taking a lot of practice because most dogs are social and they want to say, hey, how's it going? And stop and visit. So we use commands because we do not have any way to, we don't have a leash other than attached to their harness. It's very difficult to steer a dog by their harness because it's at the back end of them. So it's, there's nothing attached to their neck other than a guidance rope to keep the two dogs tied together if you're running more than one. So we use commands. The one to get them started, which we really don't need because they're going to go no matter what, is hike, hike, or let's go. We don't use mush like in the movies because it's not very exciting. Mush is just a soft word. Hike is a much more sharp, it's more effective. To slow them down, we use whoa. To turn right is G. To turn left is haw. And to pass the team is on by. These are very, very similar to like team horses, same commands.
We're talking with Melissa Omernick. She's vice president of the Wisconsin Trailblazers Sled Dog Club. We're learning about ski-joring. Do you do it? Have you tried it? Are you going to watch any of the events? Join in with your experiences and your questions, 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Mel, I understand there's also dry land ski-joring, which you do when there isn't snow on the ground. How does that work?
Well, we don't use skis. We use our feet, so that's canicross, where you can use the exact same equipment, except you put on a pair of tennis shoes and you run behind your dog. That is very popular, especially down near the cities, larger cities, because people want to get out and exercise with their dogs. So this is a very easy way, easy so far as equipment. It's very hard on the human because we have two legs, the dogs have four, so you really have to move. Another way is you can hook your dog to your bike. That's called bike juring. And we use a special line in the front so that the rope can stay off your tire. And then there's also rig racing, where you hook to like a three- or four-wheeled rig instead of a sled. And then scooter. It's a off-road scooter, so they have like dirt bike, like tires and suspension many times. And you stand on a platform while your dog is hooked to the front of the scooter.
So there are lots of different options out there when there isn't snow, but I suspect you like the straight-up ski-joring.
I love ski-joring. That's my sport. I think it's just the best.
Where did it originate?
I'm not a great historian, but my understanding is over near Finland, Norway, Sweden, in the countries where skiing was a way of getting around. And my understanding is they used reindeer. Well, as it came over here to the United States, we don't have reindeer. Our deer aren't real fond of being hooked up, I'm guessing. horses were used, and then dogs. Sled dogs are very commonly used in Alaska and Canada as a means of transportation. And many times people were skiing or snowshoeing to get from place to place because of the amount of snow. So it saves time and effort by hooking up an animal that's well-trained to get from place to place. Now, in our area now, it's for competition and fun.
Have you ever tried it with horses?
No. I don't know if I would. If the opportunity arose and it was a really nice horse, maybe. But
so tell us about some of these upcoming ski-joring events and what people should check out.
Well, this weekend, my husband and I are going to be racing in the Twin Cities at a... It's called Highland State Park Reserve, and we have a ski-jure race affiliated with a ski race. And then the following weekend, we'll be at the Merrill Sled Dog Races. And then also on January 26th, there is a ski-jure race in Marquette, Michigan. And then in Wisconsin, there'll be Land O'Lakes, Wisconsin. It's called the Three Bears Sled Dog Race. That'll be February 1st and 2nd. And then also on, looks like February 1st, Iola Winter Carnival has a ski-joring competition. So, I have not been to that one, but someday I think I'll have to check that out.
Which one is your favorite?
I would say my favorite ski-joring competition is probably coming up on February 20th is the Barky Berkey.
Oh.
In Wisconsin. That one is just so amazing. There's people out there with, they're really good skiers because that is a big ski competition.
Sure.
Maybe bring their pet dogs that aren't great sled dogs, but it's such a great atmosphere. People are happy. The dogs are so excited, and it's a carnival-like atmosphere.
What's the course like?
Most of the ski jerk competitions have a nice wide track because when you skate ski, your skis are going to the side. So generally, it has to be minimum about 10 feet, 12 is better, 14 is great. So it's a nice wide track, so there's room so you can pass and ski at the same time. And the distances vary. For beginners, we have about 2 miles. For more experienced, 4 miles. The race this weekend I'm doing is 6 miles. So it's different where you go. There are some long distance races. There's one in the Yukon territory that goes 200 some miles. That's not for me.
Oh, wow. That would be
one over in Europe. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a feat. How do you keep the dogs hydrated out there, making sure that they are healthy?
Just like with human athletes, before the competition, you make sure that they've been having a well-balanced diet leading up to this race, and they're hydrated before the race. Minimum an hour and a half before the race, I'd like them to be drinking a good quantity. So we bait their water with something that they really like. And then we tend to not feed them at minimum 6 hours before the race so they don't take care of business on the trail. We call that brown clister when they have dog poop on the trail because your skis are not going to slide very fast through that. So feeding is a timing thing with the sled dogs. And as soon as they're done running, they get a special recovery drink. It's not electrolytes like humans need. Dogs don't sweat, but they pant to stay cool. So they're burning calories. So it's an energy drink that has a lot of fat in it. It's the sled dogs and the dogs that we race with need that to regain their energy. So you get a special drink when they're done, and they're very, water is fine too.
We have to pause right here. We're learning all about the world of ski-joring with Mel Amernick. You can join in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more Wisconsin Weekend right here on the Ideas Network. It is all things ski-joring here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Ski-joring falls under the category of sled dog sports, and there are places to learn. Minocqua Winter Park holds ski-joring clinics. And a shout-out to the February ski-joring events. The Madison Winter Festival has ski-joring on the square. There's 3 Bear Winter Sled Dog Race in Land O'Lakes, the Northern Pines Sled Dog Race in Iron River, and then how about that Barky Berkey Ski Jor in none other than Hayward, as we've been talking about. Where do you like to watch ski joring? Do you have a sled dog race you watch that's coming up? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Mel Amernick is vice president of the Wisconsin Trailblazers Sled Dog Club, and she stays with us. Mel, how close-knit is that club? It sounds like this club has been around for quite some time.
Yes, the Trailblazers has been around. It was chartered in 1966, and the primary purpose of our club is to promote our sled dog racing and the welfare and the needs of dogs, and to educate people about the sport and about taking care of their dogs. And we're a very good group to work with because we all love dogs, so it makes, in my estimation, a good group of people.
I understand that you are an ER nurse. What are the health implications here? How much exercise do you get out of ski-joring?
The number one reason I'm in the sport is it is the best therapy for me, physically and mentally. Winter is a long season, and many people struggle with depression and weight gain during the winter months. For me, I don't deal with that. I get outside because I have to, not because I want to some days when it's very cold or I'm very tired, because my dogs need me. They need me to be out there running with them, and they love it, and it makes me feel so good. And once you get outside and get moving in that fresh, cold winter weather, it really helps you to feel great. Once in a while, I will pick up this head cold, but as a rule, being outside with your dogs, moving and being active makes you a very healthy and much happier person.
So if someone is interested in trying this out, doesn't have dogs or equipment, are there easy on-ramps to start ski-joring?
The best bet is to ask someone that's doing it. I get phone calls from people that are interested, and I will mentor and guide you to the best of my ability, or to go to an event to see it in action and then talk to that person that's in the competition afterwards. The best time is to talk to them afterwards, the key thing, because we're all a little bit focused on the race ahead of time. There is clinics this weekend on Sunday up at Minocqua Winter Park. We are doing ski-jur demonstrations and assisting people. Madison also has a ski-juring clinic at Elver Park, but it looks like that clinic is full, but you can still go to listen, and that's Sunday, February 2nd. So there are clinics that pop up if you go into Google search and pull it up. But I'm available to anyone that has interest. Contact me through my email.
So do you give the dogs a lot of praise afterward? How do they feel?
If you could see their faces when they're done running, if dogs are smiling, that's what they're doing. I praise them during the run and most especially afterwards, usually hugging, petting, rubbing their ears, rubbing their muscles to loosen them up a little bit. They always get a treat when they're done. Most of the time, they're not as interested in the treat as they are in the hugs. And they just love it. So even if I were standing there not saying a word, they're still very, very happy.
What is your favorite gear or outdoor wear, you know, in these cold winter months? What do you put on?
That is a great question. To enjoy the outdoors in the wintertime, you need to dress appropriately. Your base layer, according to my experience, should be breathable to wick the moisture from your skin so you aren't wet. I like wool or wool products so that it wicks the moisture away into a next layer. And so layering is very important. You can always take layers off and always keep your ears and your head covered if you're cold. That is the first place you're losing heat.
Well, Mel, thank you so much for joining us. This has been fun.
Thank you so much. I love talking about this sport. I love it so much. And if anyone is interested, I will share my knowledge and bring you in so you can do something exciting and fun this winter.
Melissa Amernick is vice president of the Wisconsin Trailblazers Sled Dog Club. We have a link, by the way, to the club on the morning show page at WPR.org. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer John K. Wilson answering a Wisconsin question about the state capitol.
Standing in the rotunda of the Wisconsin Capitol building, everything feels really big and important and majestic. You're right in the middle of Madison and right in the middle of state government. But who chose this spot to be one of the most important places in the state? Nancy from Madison wanted to know. She asked, how did the Capitol end up on the isthmus? What was the politicking that went on behind the scenes to settle on this piece of land? We talked to Bethany Brander with the Wisconsin Historical Society to help tell the story. She says that in 1836, when Wisconsin became a territory, things could have gone a lot of different ways.
There were actually 16 other locations proposed. So one was Green Bay. Another was Mineral Point. Other people wanted places that could become really great cities. So Milwaukee was one of those cities proposed because it was on Lake Michigan. It could have been a city called Wisconsinopolis, which of course doesn't exist today, or another city called Wisconsin City, which has never existed also.
So where did Madison come in? Brander says it all has to do with a politician and businessman named James Duane Doty. When territorial legislators were meeting in Belmont in southwest Wisconsin to pick a new capital, Doty went there with a plan.
So on his way to Belmont, he passes through the Four Lakes area. And conveniently in April, earlier that year, he had bought a bunch of land, which is now downtown Madison. It's the Isthmus today. And he eventually, on his way down from Green Bay, brings a surveyor with him and surveys the land, maps it out, and brings this piece of paper with him to Belmont.
On that piece of paper were the plans for this modern-looking, imaginary city Doty called Madison. And he got to work doing whatever he needed to do to sell his idea.
So when Doty gets to Belmont, it had already been known throughout the territory about the conditions that the legislators were facing at Belmont. When legislators got there, there weren't a lot of buildings, so a lot of them were crammed together in two buildings, laying on the bare floor. It was cold. accommodations just weren't very nice. And so word got out. So when Doty arrives in Belmont, he comes with a bunch of buffalo robes. And so when he gets there, he's hanging out these buffalo robes. He's showing people his map, telling them about his paper city called Madison. And he named Madison after the recently departed President James Madison. He was kind of playing to people's patriotic sensibilities here, and it worked.
But Doty was also offering more than just buffalo robes and patriotism.
He also was offering people some real estate in Madison. He bought up all this land with his company, and he wants to make money off it. So he's letting all this land go to these people for cheap. And so by the time the final vote for the city of the new territorial capital happens, about half the legislators own land in Madison, plus the two clerks of both houses. So it kind of helped sway people's opinions to make the capital of Madison.
By 1837, construction had already started on the first Capitol building in Madison. We heard from Bethany Brander, the Southwest Sites Program Manager for the Wisconsin Historical Society, telling us how Wisconsin's Capitol ended up where it is. This story came from an audience question as part of the Wisconsin Project. Submit your question, and we might answer it in a future Wisconsin Life segment. Go to wpr.org/Wisconsin. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm John K. Wilson.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. So what's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@wpr.org. That's mornings@wpr.org. And we'll check out your tip for a future Wisconsin Weekend segment. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is Wisconsin Weekend on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.